Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everybody. This is Renee. Welcome back to Renee's Heart to Heart. Thanks for coming by this morning. Today is Bullies to Buddies Day. We are going to get back into our workbook and talk a little bit about some of the things that Izzy has actually put down for us in writing, which makes it kind of nice to have something like this to work with. You know, out there in the world, we talk about bullying a lot, and I'm going to mention this again, and I've mentioned it before, but I want to bring it up again. The reason that we spend so much time with bullying is because bullying doesn't just happen in school. Bullying, very sadly, takes place everywhere, in every arena, from school, home, workplace, social activities. I heard a story the other day about a gym where a real somebody who really needed to be at the gym was being ostracized because of what they looked like. And that just blows me away. If you really believe in what you're doing in a gym to stay fit, why wouldn't you admire somebody who came to the gym that has a lot more work possibly than you have to do, and they overcame that and got to the gym? A lot of the stuff that we see, you have to wonder how miserable somebody has to be to want to spread that misery. I think in so many cases, the bully possibly needs more help than the victim. However, the victim deserves more help because they're trying to mind their own business and do their own thing and take care of themselves and make themselves a better person, and they've got somebody critiquing them and judging them, etc. Judgment is a strange thing. A lot of people appear or seem to believe that it's okay, that they even feel sometimes righteous about judging someone else because of their own personal beliefs. Well, let me say this. Judging someone else's lifestyle, their beliefs, how they eat, how they drink, how they sleep, how they play, how they work, all those things is a source of bullying. Because somebody doesn't do things the same way you do, does not give you the right to judge them. And I think that a big part of being mean to each other has to do with that. It's okay to be different. Watch a dance floor sometime in a really, really big club. Yes, there's specific dances, dance crazes that catch on, and you see everybody doing similar to the same thing. But because all of us have different energies and different bodies, the dance changes a lot in the interpretation of the person doing it. Does that mean that they're doing it wrong? I don't think so. And in our lives, we all dance a lot. And that's a metaphor, by the way. I don't mean we're all out on the dance floor. I mean we have different dances that we do in our life, and we all do them in different ways, whatever's comfortable for us. And it's nobody else's right to judge you. If you do something for somebody and you offer them something because you see that they have a specific need, and you do something for them and you don't appreciate some of the things that they do, it's not okay for you to offer something to someone and then put, you put exemptions on certain things in order to do this for them. You can do that with your kids when you're trying to teach them a lesson, but you can't do that with each other. I had a conversation with somebody yesterday whose family member has offered to help them because they're struggling. They're struggling with their kids and some behavioral problems. They're struggling with money. They're struggling with their relationship. They're going through a tough time right now. And, of course, one of the big things is money. So an important family member offered money. And in doing that, she also offered stipulations. Okay, if I give you this now, you can't do this anymore. And if I give you this, you can't do that anymore. You know, I guess as parents, we do a lot of that. But when I listened to this story, it just so rubbed me wrong. If you don't want to help them, don't help them. But don't help with your right hand and take back with your left. Everybody needs to dance their own way. So, on that note, we're going to move into the workbook. I'm going to bring Shelley in, but I want you all to remember that bullying comes in many shapes, sizes, ages, forms, all of the above. It's not always two little boys in a playground. A lot of times it's in a much bigger arena. And some of these things that we talk about are the reasons why people feel ostracized and picked on, because they're trying to make their own way. You can't make somebody else's way for them. They have to make it themselves. So they choose a different step. It's not your right, even if you're going to do something to support them. It's not your right to change their dance step. I hope that makes sense to everybody. Good morning, Shelley.
Well, good morning, Rainey.
How are you?
Doing pretty good. I have a little bit of, I'm not sure the specifics of what you're talking about, but with regard to helping people, I've helped people in the past. I had helped a friend of mine in New York a lot, I mean, to the tune of tens of thousands of dollars. And if I had it to do again, I wouldn't help her without putting stipulations on it, because a lot of times she took the money from me and did something different than what she told me she was borrowing it for. So in that particular instance, I still choose to help people, but I would put restrictions on it. I would say, okay, I'll lend you this money, but I'm going to pay your bills directly. Let me know who your creditors are. Or if you say you're going to borrow it for this, you have to pay this. In other words, I would try to empower them not to be back where they were, because that's what was happening with this other individual. She kept borrowing money from me, but because she never did the right things with it, 2 months later she was back borrowing money from me. So I wasn't helping her. So I started putting restrictions on it, like, okay, fine, but then if you're saying you're borrowing it to pay the mortgage, just give me your mortgage bill and I'll pay it for you. This way I knew that the money was going for what she said, and I was actually helping her and not enabling her to do wrong things. So I don't know what this person was putting restrictions on, but there is a way of empowering people to make better choices so that you're not just constantly there helping. I mean, money isn't the only way you can help people. It might not even be financially related. But what I'm saying is that depending on how it's done, if it's done in a kind and respectful way, you know, if you say to somebody, yeah, I'll help you out, but I don't want you back here in a couple of months, so let's talk about this. Maybe I can assist you in making, you know, working with your budget better. You know, and if you're going to empower somebody to make better choices, otherwise you're really not helping them. If you help them out of one little scrape, but you don't teach them how not to get back there, then you're really not helping the person. So that's just another way of looking at it.
This is one of those times when we have a bit of a disagreement, and which is good and fine. And I think that's one of the things a lot of the people that listen to the show appreciate, is we have often different points of view. And for me, if you tell somebody you're going to help them and you take the money to make the mortgage payment, you haven't empowered them with anything. You still have the power. You have the power. They have nothing. They have their mortgage paid,
which I'm sure, well, I would like to think they'd be grateful for, but you haven't empowered them in any way. You've done it for them. And this is a mistake a lot of us make, and I understand it completely. I've done it. I've been there. I probably could write the book. However, it is not an empowerment. Do something for somebody and take care of it from A to Z. What empowers somebody is for them to, money's tough. Money issues always have extenuating circumstances. And if somebody's in trouble and they say to you, you know, I need to pay my mortgage, and they borrow the money from you for the mortgage, and then something happens in the family, and say somebody's sick, and there's a huge copay at the hospital, and you can't get your kid in the hospital today without having the insurance and the copay. So you take the mortgage money and you pay the copay. The empowerment, you know, it's not, you can't do something for somebody and feel like you've empowered them somehow. If you've done it, the only one who's powerful is you. It's your money, your action, you did what needed to be done, but you've actually taken away most of their power, to my way of thinking.
No, I disagree with that because that's not what I'm talking about. I'll give you an example so maybe the listeners can understand what I'm talking about. I had borrowed money from, this was when I lived in New York, right after I got divorced from my ex-husband, and I had a lot of, I mean, Jolly left me with a lot of debt, and I was struggling. I was working full-time, and I was struggling, and I just needed a little bit to get ahead. Well, my friend David Rosenblum, who is a doll, I haven't spoken to him in decades, but he was a financial advisor, you know, as it turned out. So in order for me to borrow the money from him, I had to accept his help as a financial advisor. He came over to my house, and he actually taught me how to put myself on a budget where I could not only pay him back comfortably, but I would be debt-free with all my other debts in 2 years. And I did. I worked his plan. I did exactly what he told me to do, and he was right. I was able to pay him back in under 2 years, and at the same time, on a very, very restrictive salary, and also pay off all my other bills. So at the end of 2 years, I was in good shape, and it was a little bit of a struggle because I had to be very disciplined, but because he showed me up front, I was able to do it, and this is what I'm talking about. So that was very empowering. So he gave me the money, providing I agreed to work this plan he gave me. So he empowered me. This is what I'm talking about. A lot of times people just throw money at each other, and then the person's situation doesn't improve. They weren't given any heads up on how not to be there next month, and then it just becomes this vicious cycle. I mean, I watch these judge shows, and it's amazing to me how many family members sue each other because this family member helped out that family member, and it was supposed to be a loan, and then he never paid him back. They borrowed thousands of dollars, never even paid him back $50, and it causes bad blood, and it causes hard feelings. And they never have any agreement. There's never, you know, the one person said it was a gift, the other person said it was this. So if things are clear up front, it takes the stress out of helping someone. You know, sit down, spend 10 minutes. It doesn't have to be like what I went through, but it was very, very empowering that I did that. And it did help me in the future to be able to utilize this system. I actually used it a couple times in my life. It was very, very beneficial to have that, like, in the back of my mind. And that's what I'm talking about, not just throwing money at somebody. When I said that I took over my friend's mortgage payment, is because she was going to lose her house, but I was afraid to give her the money because every time I gave her money, she went out and she bought drugs. And I was like, okay, that's one of the reasons why her house was in foreclosure. So I refused to give her money one more time. I said I'd pay her mortgage payment for her. So I wasn't willing to help her again unless she allowed me to really save her house this time because I was afraid she was going to blow it on drugs and then still get kicked out on the street, and she had two young boys. So that was my only way of dealing with this, and she didn't tell me until the last minute trying to, like, rush me into giving her money.
So these are some of the situations that come up. I think it's good to help people, but I think you just have to do it with everybody understanding, is it a loan? Is it a gift? Are you just helping this person out of the goodness of your heart and they can go on about their way? If it's a loan, make sure that it's understood, you know, help them. Help them figure out how they're going to pay you back comfortably so that it doesn't cause bad blood. Because every time I've seen these situations where there was some sort of an agreement made where both sides understood it and they put it down on writing, there's never any bad blood. Everything goes very, very well after that because both sides clearly understood what they were agreeing to each other. And it prevents issues later on.
I don't disagree with any of the things you just said right now. What I disagreed with was you saying that you said you would pay the mortgage for somebody. That is not empowering them. Going and sitting with somebody and teaching them how to balance their checkbook and teaching them how to pay their bills promptly and showing them how to work on a budget, that's an empowerment. That's a whole different story than you just doing something for somebody. So that's exactly everything that you just explained the second time is a whole other scenario. One is babysitting somebody, and the other one is empowering somebody. And again, I don't want to get caught up in this. I'm just saying, if it's a bad situation, and I mean, we all know about borrowing money from bad sources, and you know, they don't care what you do with the money as long as you pay them back with their interest. And all the movies we've watched through the years of, you know, having fingers broken or all this kind of stuff, we understand that the person with the money absolutely, positively has more power. That's a given. However, I'm talking about the same kind of loan you just talked about today. And I'm talking about being able to, if you don't want to give somebody the money because you know it's not going to go to the right place, my suggestion is, don't give it to them. If you know that you're not really going to help them because they're not going to do what they need to do, then don't give it to them. However, if you appreciate that person and you want to give it to them, the point I'm trying to make is that you can't lord it over somebody. Helping somebody the way you described the second time is a whole different story, honey. Whole different
story. Right. Well, that's what I was talking about. I just didn't go into all the details when I first mentioned it, but that's what I'm talking about when I say empowering somebody is actually teaching them how to improve on their situation so they're not back there, you know, the next month again. And that's what happens a lot of times. People start having financial difficulties and it becomes a vicious cycle where they think if they just borrow it this month, they'll be fine. But if they don't change how they act with money, if they don't change how they spend it and how they budget, it'll be a couple of months and they'll be right back where they were needing to borrow money again. You know, there is a way. I mean, I thought David was brilliant. I never realized that I could budget the way he showed me and still be able to do things. You know, I would still be able to put groceries on my table. I did have to become a little disciplined, you know, with going out and things like that. But he even showed me how to be reasonable with that so that, I mean, I didn't live in isolation for 2 years, but I had to be disciplined. And it was actually fun working the plan that he showed me. It was very, very rewarding to achieve that.
Yes. Well, and you're exactly right. That's a very nice way to help somebody. And, of course, we've talked about this before, and we both feel very strongly about the fact that this is something that should be done when a kid is in school.
It always upset me that what he showed me is not something that's taught in school.
Oh,
and there's
that
a lot
is.
Of there's a lot of courses out there. John Cometa had a course out that was very similar to what my Fred had taught me. And there's other people out there that have like debt cure courses that teach people, and I find them very valuable, even if you just Google it on the internet and find a free source. But I highly recommend that to people because a lot of times people think they can't get themselves out of debt when if you follow some of these formulas that are out there making very minor changes in a lot of cases, people find that they can stretch their dollars much more efficiently. But you get into like this habit routine of how you spend your money and what you spend it on and what you think is important, And once you really have to sit down and look at it, and it generally is a 2-year time frame. If people follow these formulas, if they follow these procedures, they can make a huge dent in their debt in under 2 years, where all of a sudden they're seeing like light at the end of the tunnel. And when you start seeing that and you start seeing bills getting paid off, it gives you a sense. First of all, your credit rating starts going up, and it just gives people a sense of more control over their money. So I highly recommend these courses.
Well, like I said, it is a way of helping people, also a way of lording it over somebody. And I'm just saying, if you don't believe somebody can manage something that you're going to do for them, and you know in your heart that you're just buying them some time and you're not fixing the problem, then instead of, you know, there's diplomatic ways of helping people and telling them, I'm not going to give you this money unless I can go pay your mortgage payment, or I can come with you and make sure that you spend the right amount of money on this and the right amount of money on that. That's not the way to do it, and you demean somebody by doing that to them. And it still doesn't make you a bad person. It makes you a wonderful person because you want to help. I'm just saying we need to think about what kind of power we take away from somebody when we're really trying to help them. You need to think about how you manage yourself. Most people don't even think about it. They just think about the fact that they're helping somebody. They're not thinking about what they're doing to somebody long term. To find somebody like your friend who stepped in and said, let me show you how to do this so that this never happens to you again, is awesome. But that's not really what usually happens. It's usually the
right
other scenario. And it is a source of bullying because you have the upper hand.
And I've seen that. I know exactly what you're talking about. I've absolutely seen that. And I've also seen it where people have gifted money to an individual. Don't worry about it. I'm helping you out. You don't have to pay me back. And then 6 months down the road or a year down the road, they get in a fight, and all of a sudden now it's a loan. Now they want their money back. That's another thing. That's why I'm saying you need to be clear up front. You know, is this a gift you're getting from this person? Because sometimes people who are very, you know, who have money will spontaneously be generous with it. But then if you get in an argument a year later, it doesn't all of a sudden become a loan then just because now you're annoyed at this person over something. So people need to be clear and responsible with themselves. And if you do a gesture of kindness to help somebody, then leave it out there. Leave it as a gift. Whether you have a fight with them a year later, it's irrelevant. If that was initially a gift, stay with that, because then that's right. Then they're becoming a bully. Then they're lording over, all right? But if it was a loan, put it in writing, you know? People say, well, it's my cousin or it's my friend or whatever, and you know, it's my boyfriend, and you know, I didn't want to put it in writing. I'm telling you right now, it's amazing how many of these shows get on there. You have to put it in writing, and it can absolutely be a source of bullying, because on a lot of these court shows, these people are just really nasty to each other. Once it gets to the point where they're saying, you owe me and you're not paying me back, and the other person said, well, it was a gift, that type of thing. And then they become really nasty to each other, and it's terrible because it can rip relationships apart. And then you end up not helping each other, and you have the one person acting superior over the other, and it really is an awful situation. So you have to be clear about your motives, you know, and you really should never give to anybody expecting to get it back unless you are making it a contract and writing up an agreement between each other and helping them to find a way to pay you back.
Well, all of those are good suggestions, and of course everybody knows that that's the closest or easiest way to lose many friendships and family members. Has to do with money. But let's leave that topic. I brought it up because it was brought to me yesterday by somebody that I spent some time with, and I just thought we should talk about the fact that those are things, there's one way of doing it that's a good way, there's another way of doing it that's not such a good way. So,
and I agree with you completely. I would say on the judge shows I watch, I would say more than 30-40% of the shows are just about what you just brought up. Somebody helping another person, and then regretting it a year later, and them going at each other, and it's very, very prevalent in these judge shows.
Oh, for sure. Well, money rules the world. There's no two ways about it. It absolutely rules the world, and we have to hope that some of us have some good judgment thrown in there on occasion, so that it doesn't become what it could become if we didn't do that. So let's get to the book. We left off last week talking about unintended negative consequences, talking about what we grow up believing is supposed to be what is truer, and the repercussions of making a kid think that it's supposed to be someplace that it isn't going to get. Bullying experts almost always universally insist that bullying must not be tolerated. Schools must not let bullies get away with their actions and need to punish them. But many experts don't like using the word punishment and replace it with a euphemism, which is consequences. Parents and anti-bullying organizations alike demand that schools punish bullies. School anti-bullying laws make bullying a crime, which means that bullying must be punished. Now, that's where we left off last week. The good intentions, of course, are... we want to teach kids that it's important to be nice to each other. Of course we do. A moral society requires that people be punished by the legal authorities for all bad behavior. We're afraid that if we allow anyone to get away with the acts of bullying other students, that the other students will learn that bullying is acceptable, and as a result, bullying will become rampant. We believe that punishing bullies will make kids afraid to be mean, and that if they don't stop being mean, we need to administer successfully harsher punishments, culminating with expulsion and possible transfer to special schools for behavioral disordered children. So this is what things snowball into. What he's trying to explain to us is when we make hard and fast rules, they snowball into enormous snowballs. they get bigger and bigger, and instead of easing the problem, you make the problem enormous, so that now...
Elaine, can you read the last one again? My phone cut out for a minute, so I missed the last one.
We believe that punishing bullies will make kids afraid to be mean, and that if they don't stop being mean, we need to administer successfully harsher punishments, culminating and possible transfer to special schools for behavior disordered children. So you see how out of hand that is, and indeed,
yes,
there some. And that's really not what we want to do. What we want to do, again, is a much nicer place to go. We want to teach our own children how to, first of all, not take into their heart and let it fester something mean somebody said to them. We want them to look at somebody and say, you know, that's not true. I don't do this, or I don't do that, or I don't have this, or I don't have that. Maybe even teach them how to say, you know, I'm sorry you don't like me, and walk away.
Right. Well, one of the other problems, talking about it from the bully side of the equation, one of the reasons that the punishment doesn't work is because, number one, as we've discussed, most bullies are bullies because they're suffering on some level, all right? And by punishing them, now you're just basically injuring them more because you're not addressing why they're acting out to begin with. And if you try to alter somebody's behavior just simply through consequences and not teaching them the benefits of being, you know, sensitive and playing well with others and things like that, then they're only going to behave properly when there's a consequence involved. When you teach somebody just the reality of respecting other people, being more sensitive to other people's feelings, and not acting out in a way that hurts others, if you can teach someone to appreciate living like that, then you've given them a life skill And it doesn't matter whether or not there's a consequence. They're going to do the right thing just because it's the right thing. So by counseling bullies, getting them to release their anger or their hurt or whatever is making them act that way, letting them get it off their chest, and so that they don't look for innocent victims anymore, you've now set this person up for a lifetime of not bullying anymore. But when you constantly punish the bully, they just become angrier, and you never stop the pattern. They just go into an adult that's a bully, and that's why we see so much of that out in the workplace.
Well, and the point is, I think the overall consensus, like everything else, once you make something a rule, then a lot of people have trouble deciphering between a rule that serves them and a rule that doesn't, because you grow up in a world that teaches you that's the rules. There was
right.
a cute show on the other day, a little boy, a baby, on the refrigerator, and it was on Funniest Home Videos or the Right This Minute video show that I get such a big kick out of. He's sitting in his high chair, and he's reading the family rules, and you see them written in big letters on the refrigerator. He was not even 2 years old. And he's reading it, and he's saying, you know, be nice to others, and don't fight with your brother and sister. Don't be mean to the dog. All these rules are on the refrigerator. He could barely talk, but he's reading these rules. The last rule is learn to laugh a lot. And the little boy goes, ha, 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 ha. It was hysterical. And I thought, you know, those are the kind of rules that are meaningful, because those are lifelong rules. Those are lifelong rules, being nice to, you know, it's like the Ten Commandments.
Right.
Lifelong rules, and they're different. But to say to somebody, you know, don't ever tolerate somebody being mean to you. Or don't ever let, there for a while we were doing a lot of this. This has subsided. Nobody can get into your space. Remember when that started happening?
Oh, my God, yes.
And I thought to myself, why are they doing that? Now people with good intentions are, you know, wanting to lay a hand on somebody because they feel bad for them or something. They're going to start a problem. We talked about this a couple weeks ago, too, about the time that I touched that kid's hands when he wasn't going to pay me at the cash register. So there was a time when we put all these things out there that were supposed to protect all of us as human beings, and they were ridiculous.
Yeah, and now if you just touch somebody's shoulder, that can be seen as aggressive and invading their space. You know, something very innocuous, something that's meant to be supportive, you know. And unfortunately, there are people that do abuse touch and, you know, and will touch in inappropriate places and then say that they're only doing that. So that's kind of where the laws came from. But it's a shame that such a small portion of society misuse that. And it really is. Touching is really a very, very kind and supportive way for us to teach, you know, to show support to each other. We do connect physically. So even if a perfect stranger were to touch you, and I'm talking about appropriate touching, okay? Somebody puts their hand on your shoulder or touches your hand out of support or compassion, it's very healing to receive that true compassionate energy from somebody. But like you said, we've gone, like the pendulum has swung from one extreme to the other, and now people aren't even allowed in your space, as it said.
Oh, because we have a tendency to make everything either black or white.
Mm-hmm.
No beiges, nothing in between, just black or white.
And no gray area.
No, and that's not life. It just isn't. There's always extenuating.
But most of the fun happens in the gray area.
Exactly. But I think that one of the things that that Izzy's trying to explain to us is that life is unbalanced. And You will run into somebody that you don't particularly care for. That's okay.
Yeah.
It's OK okay to walk up to him and say, you know, I really don't like you. That's not necessary for one thing, and it's not it doesn't show any kind of the word I want, any kind of control over your own behavior. But to
right.
not like is okay. Or to find out that somebody doesn't like you is okay. Everybody isn't going to love you, and you're not going to love everybody else. But it doesn't mean that you need to be mean to them or need to take it to another level. And I think that's the most important lesson. When AJ comes home and says to me, that kid drives me crazy, I don't like him, I say, then leave him alone. If you don't like him, why do you want to spend any time with him, whatever kind of time it is? Good energy,
right.
bad energy, whatever it is, if you don't like him, spend time with people that you like and that like you back. If we could teach the kids in school that simple lesson, a lot of this turmoil and this chaos would stop.
Right, right.
You know, I don't spend time with people I don't like. I never have. If I felt, you know how when you're, say you're 16, 17, 18, and you're at a, I don't know, did you have sock hops when you were a kid, Shel?
Yeah.
School?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, our sock hops were always right after school. They weren't at night. They were right as soon as the last bell rang. You went to the gym, and they play music on a stereo, if everybody knows what a stereo is. and you danced around and had fun. And when you went to the sock hop, it was very nondescript. It wasn't like a big dance where you were supposed to have a date or you were supposed to, you know, or three or four girls all went together or something like that. You just all showed up on your own to the sock hop. And I remember thinking at age 15 that this was a good thing because it was the only time sometimes that I met kids that I never even met in a school where I had been going for, you know, since I was 11 years old. So I thought it was a good social thing. But even then, you see some kids that you know are just not going to your wavelength, your cup of tea. So that's not where you go. That's not the crowd that you go to. And
right.
learning to do that would stop a lot of the animosity and a lot of the hatred. It's even true with us as adults. If you and I go someplace and meet with a small group of people, we tend now at this stage of our lives to go to the people that we know are like-minded with us. But when you're 15, you're not even sure what your mind is like, let alone somebody else's. So that's, you know, you're struggling to figure out who you are, so you really have no clue who everybody else is. But if you, you know, if you just kind of let go and go where you're comfortable, then that's usually the right place. Instead of going someplace where you're going to want to pick a fight with somebody or somebody's going to want to pick a fight with you.
Right.
Right?
Right, exactly.
So these are the kind of things that he's talking about in this chapter, and it's about putting all the negative punishments or repercussions on any kind of a crime instead of trying to stop the assault or the altercation before it even gets started. And
right.
all of that has to do with learning about who you are yourself. So that's what he's trying to teach parents, to teach their kids to learn more about who they are, accept the fact that not everybody's going to love them, that not everybody's going to think perfect as mommy and daddy think that they are, and just to deal with that instead of making a big deal out of it. It's okay. There's millions of people in the world. Everybody doesn't have to like you.
And the fact is that more comfortable you are with who you are, I think in one of the statements, Izzy had said that it's not all based on self-esteem, or maybe I misunderstood that, because from where I'm looking at, it is partially self-esteem. The better you feel about yourself, the more comfortable you are with who you are, especially if you have something about you that makes you obviously different. Let's say you have a scar or or you're very short or very tall or something like that, or there's something about you that's obviously different from other people, okay? I applaud parents that see this in their children and make them okay with their differences, because you see a lot of kids that go to school that are very different, and they're like popular because they were so comfortable with themselves that kids chose not to pick on them. So why is this one child over here with a terrible scar very, very popular and everybody loves them, and this child over here that has a scar is withdrawn and picked on all the time? It has to do with their comfort level with themselves, because if you're comfortable with yourself, regardless of any obvious difference between you and another person, then when somebody starts picking on you, you go to the, like, well, yes, yeah, so what? So I've got a scar on my face, big deal. What does that mean, you know? And when you act with that nonchalance and like you don't care, it diffuses other people from picking on you. And I think that's very valuable for parents to teach children. But then the parent has to be completely comfortable with the child and give them a realistic attitude towards themselves. Yeah, maybe you have a scar here, but look at all these other gifts you have. You love reading, you're talented in sports, you know. Help the kid to realize where they shine and move them forward. Every person I've ever heard lecture that had a rough childhood because something happened to them, an accident or an illness, and it changed them forever, they always talk about the fact that their parents were there teaching them to concentrate on what they had to offer, not what they lost in this accident or not what happened to them. And instead of going and looking at their scars or their or anything that happened to them, now they're just concentrating on the fact that they do this really good. So they can't do other things well anymore that other kids can, but they can do this one thing really good, and that's what they end up becoming famous for. So there is something to parents teaching their kids to really know who they are and be comfortable with it. And when you're comfortable, anybody and everybody can insult you, and you're not going to care.
Well, I don't know if you won't care a little bit, but you certainly can handle it to the point where it doesn't stay in you and hurt you and fester inside of you. That's for sure. I mean, any kind of a derogatory comment to anybody, even people who are strong and full of self-esteem and all those kind of things, can still be hurt by words, but it doesn't ruin your day, and it doesn't make you feel like, you know, you've got to run right home and change everything about yourself. That's for sure. But I also think that learning to be who you're comfortable with being is another real knack that isn't always as easy to find when you're a kid. In other words, you know, you've got some kids who are showmen, right? You got some kids who get out there and they make everybody laugh. And I'm still very good friends. I don't ever see him, but we talk on Facebook and everything. We were in sixth grade together.
Oh, wow.
And he was hysterical. He was always the class clown. He would get the teachers laughing. He would get everybody laughing. And he became a fire marshal in Broward County. And he's got kids and grandkids and all that kind of stuff. And we met up, I don't know, a couple of years ago. He was coming through Palm Beach, so he stopped and we visited and everything. It was the first time we'd seen each other in, God, I don't know, 30 years, 40 years. Anyway, he was hysterical in school, hysterical. And the teachers wouldn't really even know what to do with him, you know. And, of course, we had a teacher named Mrs. Hatfield who'd get so upset with him that she'd get so flustered she'd be spitting all over herself. And, of course, that would make the whole class laugh even harder. And sometimes Bobby wouldn't have to do much of anything, but her eyes, one was like, didn't move with the other one. I don't know. I called Bobby some googly eyes or something, which made us all laugh, of course. And she'd start yelling at him, and he'd say, Mrs. Hatfield, I can't tell whether you're looking at me or somebody else. And then we'd all go into his, right? And
hilarious.
And I was sweet. I was a sweet child. And I didn't really want to hurt her feelings. I would never have done that on my own, but I did laugh, and it was funny. Still funny
right.
today when I think about it. But he could, and then another kid could say the same thing with the same intent to make everybody laugh, and everybody is appalled by what he says. Did you ever meet
exactly.
people like they can say whatever they want to anybody, and everybody cracks up because of their demeanor or their presentation or something, and then another kid says the same thing, and it's like everybody's appalled. Oh, my God, I don't believe you said that. Nobody laughs, nothing. It's, you know, it's the personality that you have. We're all so different. Somebody
right.
can say something.
It also has to do with the intent. If it sounds like he's just a jokester and he didn't want to hurt her feelings, he was just being funny, where if another kid said the exact same words but said it to be mean or cruel, I could see that that kids would jump on him. So a lot of it has to do with the delivery. It's like being a stand-up comic. You can't just
mm-hmm.
get up there and read lines. It's all how you read the lines. It's the timing. It's the inflection. You know, that's why stand-up comics have a very different energy. It's not, they're not just telling jokes. They're telling jokes in a particular way. So I think a lot of it has to do with the intent. Obviously, your friend, who sounds like he must have been hilarious, was just funny. And he was even funny with the teacher. I wonder if the teacher ever thought about him and laughed at some of the things he did, you know, realizing how she pushes buttons.
Our sixth grade teacher, who we all loved, I still remember him vividly. His name was Mr. Reed, and Bobby would have him just rolling, just cracking up. And I remember one time the whole class was all in trouble, and Mr. Reed left the class, and he says, "Now, I'm serious. If anybody leaves their seat, if anything happens, you're all in trouble. You're going to have 6 months of homework." You know, he went on and on and on. We all just sat there, and we all loved him. So, you know, so he walked out of the room, comes back like 10 minutes later, and he says to the class, he said, "Did you all stay in your seats?" And Bobby started this big story about how this guy started towards the other guy and this happened. And, I mean, went on for like 5 minutes, this big story. Mr. Reed just put his head down on the desk and started cracking up, you know. So the rest of us are all going, "Bobby, shut up, shut up. You're going to get us all in more trouble," you know. But he didn't. To read, it lightened the whole rest of the day, and it was
right.
great. But it is all in how you present yourself and how you put yourself out there. And some of us can do it, and some of us cannot. But I think bullying and the behavior of others, again, a lot of times has to do with our own behavior. So I've read this whole book privately. And his whole idea is to teach your kids to be, while not take themselves so seriously. That's number one, because that doesn't usually serve you. You have to have a little flexibility in who you are and what you are and what you believe in, because that just makes things a lot easier on you. But learning all what works and what doesn't work, of course, and one of the things that he talks about a lot is the rules that have been set up previously, like punishing a kid for mouthing off in class, like the repercussions of poor behavior, and taking the side of the child that appears to be the victim. One of the things that you do, and he doesn't really say these words, but the essence of it is once you portray yourself as a victim, you almost always stay a victim. And that's the saddest part about growing up.
Right.
You can never get to the place where you don't feel like a victim and you don't feel like everybody is, you know, just going out of their way to pick on you. Don't know what you did, don't know how you act, don't know what's the matter with you, but nobody likes, you know, that old story, "I'm going to go out and eat worms."
Yeah,
you see that person forever. You and I have met people like that now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, or the worst, you know, Winnie the Pooh. "Oh, bother. Oh, this. everything makes them sad and nothing ever good happens to them. And from another point of view, if somebody's looking at them, somebody else might see them as a totally different person. But they've adapted victim mode, and that's where they stay. And consequently, they attract the aggressors, because an aggressor can spot a victim a mile away.
And sometimes because of their behavior, because once you get into the workplace and you're kind of a little whiny and you're always going to superiors to assist you, because once you get into that mode, people who have those types of attitudes don't believe they can stand up for themselves. So they're always going to upper management to assist them. And unless they're really, really talented, it's not tolerated very long. You know, if they're really talented, then a lot of times the upper management will put up with it, but the person is not really gaining themselves any respect, and that's the shame of it. You know, they're making more of a spectacle of themselves with their constant need for social assistance from management, and that's not what management is there for. You know, so, and I've seen that play out at a couple of jobs where you have somebody that they're always complaining, well, I don't like the way this person talks to me, I'm being picked on here, nobody's listening to me, and that really just has no place in the business. And you can tell that they must have been somebody that was picked on when they were younger, because now they brought this into their adult lives, into the workplace.
Well, that's for sure. I think victim and bully mode stay with you your whole life. I believe that. I think it maybe gets, gets tailored a little bit to so that you can, or we can accept who we are, because we think other people have made us that way, and so it becomes a little bit more tailored than when you're, 13 or 14 years old. But I do believe that that is one of the things that happens, and I think that we've struck out with all of the lectures about self-esteem and feeling important and knowing your worth and all those kind of things instead of, there's a lot to be said for acceptance, you very often can't make yourself into somebody else. You are who you are, and I think accepting who you are and making yourself as good, or as, I don't like the word good either, but making yourself the kind of person that you're happy to be with should be your goal. That should really be your goal, because if you're happy with you, pretty much everybody else is.
Exactly. And that's the whole point. If you can feel comfortable with who you are and you're satisfied with who you are, it doesn't mean that you don't have aspirations to improve yourself, but at each stage of your life, if you can be comfortable with who you are, other people pick up on that and they're automatically comfortable around you. You know, you made a comment earlier that that when mean comments are made, most people, they're going to get hurt feelings anyway, whether they allow it to ruin their day or not is their choice. But for me personally, and I know other people that are like me, I have another close friend who's very similar in personality to me, and I don't get hurt feelings if somebody insults me unless it's somebody that I already know and care about. Now, if somebody I know and care about says something critical about me, then that might hurt my feelings, but I'm still not going to react in a way that's negative. I'll talk it out with them to figure out, is this really an issue with me? Do I really have something I need to work on here? But if a perfect stranger or somebody that I'm not personally involved with says something critical or nasty about me, it actually doesn't hurt my feelings. It might frustrate me because I might say, okay, well, where is that coming from? But it doesn't hurt my feelings in the sense that it's kind of in one ear and out the other, because I really don't care if somebody I don't care about thinks something poorly of me. As far as I'm concerned, that's their issue. And especially if it's something I know not to be true about myself, I kind of dismiss it. It's like, well, that's their problem. I don't know why they think that of me, but it doesn't really affect me. The only thing is on a job, if somebody in a position of power thinks something poorly of you, it would be a concern because it can affect your job and raises and promotions, but it still doesn't hurt my feelings. It's a different reaction I would have out of a sense of, oh, is this person going to hold me back from moving forward? because they think this thing of me that's not accurate, and then I might make actions to try and change their opinion of me, but do it in a proactive way. So I just wanted to put that out there because I don't know that everybody does get their feelings hurt just by hearing nasty things if they are secure in who they are and they know that what they're doing is appropriate and correct and things like that.
Well, and I think that that's true. But, you know, at some point in time, maybe next week when we do this show again, we have not moved off of one page because we've discussed so much about the responsibility of making yourself not a victim, which I think is important. But I'd like to hear, I'd really like to hear you explain how you would approach somebody who said something to you that you weren't sure about, that was derogatory about who you are, and you just said, you know, if I thought maybe they were right about it, I might want to, you know, see what I could do to make some changes about however I express that kind of behavior and stuff like that. So I'd like to hear how you would talk to somebody. Maybe that would be a valuable lesson for a lot of other people about how they would address somebody.
And the interesting thing with me is that I've actually had that situation play out a couple of times, and a couple of times I didn't handle it appropriately and it backfired, and a couple of times I did handle it appropriately and I got very different results. So I can actually give real life examples of what I did that worked and what I did that didn't work.
Okay, so what would we call a lesson like that? How would you explain, you know, you're going to talk to, say, a 12-year-old girl who's just heard something, and she actually worries that maybe somebody has hit the nail on the head, that maybe something somebody said to her in a bad way kind of hit home, and she's wondering if it might be true. How would she approach, if not the person that said it to her, how would she approach anybody to see how she could work on something that she fears there might be some validity to and wants to change it? How would she approach them? I don't want you to tell us now because we don't have enough time.
Right,
but
obviously.
I want next, when we do the bully show, let's talk about exactly how you feel you could address somebody and say, without feeling like an idiot and without making it something that somebody else isn't going to want to even try, how you would approach somebody and say, you know, what you said to me the other day, you know, kind of hit home. Can we talk about that? What did I do to make you think? I don't want to put words in your mouth, but you know what I'm asking you to do.
Yes, exactly. Yep.
Okay, because I think that conversation would be very beneficial, just young people, but to everybody. And I think that it would be something that we could really have some pros and cons about. So, but we're out of time. I want to thank everybody. I want to let everybody know that we'll be on tomorrow morning with Monica and Shelley and talk about some more health issues. We haven't really honed in on a topic in the last few weeks, cancer and brain food. And I think, and I might ask the girls to talk about skin. We touched on some of the bad uses of sunscreen last week. And I kind of want to talk about skin now because we're getting into the summer months here in Florida and people just bake themselves out in the sun. I'd kind of like to talk. Do you think that would be a comfortable topic, Shel?
Sure.
About hair?
Yeah, definitely.
Okay. So I will talk to Monica today and tell her that we'd like to do something on skin care. So tune in. But today, go out and make it a great day. It looks like it's going to be nice out here in Florida. I hope all you are their minds are not frozen solid yet. So God bless everybody. Have a great day. Thanks, Shel. I'm going to call you in a few minutes.
Okay, sounds good. All right, have a wonderful day, everyone.
Bye-bye.